Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, where ordinary heroes tell extraordinary stories during unique and never been heard before conversations with your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hillary's unique listening and way of asking questions results in conversations that aren't usually talked about, so you can create the life that you really want but are afraid you can't really have. We are demonstrating the greatness in the human spirit in creating a world where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness, purpose, and passion. Now, here's your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And today we have a very special guest. Her name is Dawn Fleming, and she wrote this book, Claim Your Dream Life. Dawn is not just an author. She's also an attorney, an entrepreneur. She was in real estate, and she was one of the top performers in her network marketing company. So Dawn is quite a wide range of personalities, would you call it, or roles?
And so,
yeah, she is, yeah.
Experiences,
that's the word. Okay, great. All right, so let me start at the beginning. I always like to know, like, where did you grow up? Was it always in California or
no? No, no. I love that question. Actually, it's more apropos because people ask me where I'm from and I always answer that's complicated. But I grew up in Minnesota, Bloomington, Minnesota. I will always be from Minnesota in spite of the fact that I haven't lived here full time since my late 20s. But I have spent the last three glorious summers here. That was a dream of mine. I can't stand cold, snow, any of that stuff, which is why I left. And but it was always a dream to come back here for the summer. And we just, the Minnesota State Fair is like no other in the country, and I'm in the Vikings, my Golden Gopher alma mater. University is two blocks from this place, so it's just been fabulous to be back in, you know, my hometown, which I love dearly. So,
And then where will you go for the winter?
That's a good question.
All right, good. We'll get there. Yeah.
I'm relaxed right now, and that's okay. It's called going with the flow, but we can talk about that. But we've been living in Mexico for the last 8 years. Right. So, the first five were in Isla Mujeres, which is a little island off the coast of Cancun, where we own a boutique hotel. And then the last two winters, we were in Mérida, which is the capital of the Yucatan, the state of Yucatan, old Spanish city, very, very popular city, growing very rapidly.
Wow. All right. Let's go back. So you grew up in Minnesota. And then where did you go from there? I know you were in California before you went sailing, but
I married a man that I met in junior high school. We did high school, college, medical school, residency, see ya. So I have that story. And he matched University of California at Irvine residency. So that's how I ended up in Orange County. And I just stayed after the divorce.
He said see ya.
Yeah, he didn't want to be married anymore. And so in a moment of insanity, I went to law school. I had a pretty good career in real estate. But as you probably know, your listeners know, it's a roller coaster, feast or famine, right? And when you're married to a doctor, not so bad. When you're a single woman, you know, trying to pay your bills, I wasn't really comfortable with that. So the reason for the insanity was Hillary's because he was a psychiatrist. And that's a whole nother story. We don't really want to go down that road. But let's just say I was a little messed up that time in my life.
Was it a shock when he, I mean,
yeah, total
touched
shock.
Her high.
It's not
was like a flyby wedding. Like,
did he say
he was unhappy or he just,
I knew he was unhappy, but you know, if you study these sorts of things, it's not uncommon for people who have a long educational process like that to get to the end and go, is this it? Like, is this what I'm going to do? Like, you know, kind of have these lofty ideals and dreams about what it might be like. And I just thought it was that. I thought it was like, you know, because I mean, residency was like 100 hours a week.
So when people go through a long period of education, oh, they come out and they're like, oh my God, is this it?
Is this it? Yeah.
That's what happened.
And I thought that's what it was.
Something? Yeah.
Well, no, later through, because we went through counseling and so forth, and some stuff came out that in spite of the fact that I hadn't known him for long, there were some real serious trauma issues, like sexual abuse that I was unaware of. And so that was, needless to say, eye-opening, especially when you've known someone for half your life, to, you know, really... No, you really didn't know this person, almost, you know, and there was a big personality change. And yeah, it was quite a shock. Honestly, it was quite a shock.
Okay. So, and how did you find that out?
He told me.
Oh, he told you.
Ultimately. But this was after counseling and yeah. And I was like, wow. Wow.
I mean, did you say no, right? Yeah. But I think a lot of times people repress it. They don't even know. Do you know what I mean?
But yes.
Would he, if it wasn't for all that, did you see yourself being with him forever? I mean, this was like a shocker, or you were kind of like, eh, what are we doing?
Yeah. You know, that's a good question. It's hard to really, I mean, this was 30 years ago. Yeah. So it was a long, long time ago. I was a totally different person. Yeah. But I can tell you this. I mean, I was raised till death do us part. And that's my values. It was like, you know, I'll make it work. I mean, short of him, you know, physically beating me, I probably would have stayed. So he did me a favor. Like, I wouldn't have this amazing life that I've had since then without that. So I don't harbor any animosity. I mean, it was, there was some trauma that came up earlier this year, unexpectedly. And I've kind of worked through that. But one thing I learned in that process that is really fascinating to me, because, you know, I did therapy. I mean, like, I had worked through this. I had, you know, released any animosity. It was almost actually a blessing, right? Because, but for that, I wouldn't be married to this amazing man that I met, you know, 10 years later, right, and had all these incredible experiences. But what I didn't know was there's cellular memory of trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been seeing the last couple of summers, I've been working with a lady here locally who's an amazing energy healer. Mm. And it's like you have the mental side of it, you have the emotional side of it, but there's actually a physical element to this trauma that we experience. And it has to be cleared. And I didn't know how to do that. Like when this issue came up in, I was looking at possibly entering into a partnership with a old friend I've known for 25 years, who happens to have a PhD in psychology. And so we were going through some things and ultimately it wasn't a fit, but in the process, like the tears just kept coming and I didn't know where I'm like, why am I getting this reaction? This doesn't make any sense. It wasn't logical. It wasn't emotional. I didn't feel like really hurt by anything. It just was like this physical reaction that happened. And I asked for guidance. I actually went for a long walk and I prayed for, like, you know, 40 minutes in this walk. And towards the end of it, like, I got a flash on what the origin of this was. And it was actually that this sort of psychological torture that he put me through in order to allow himself to be off the hook. Like, he had to make me out to be a monster in order for him to rationalize leading me, because I'd always been nothing but supportive, right? And worked two jobs and paid the bills and did the laundry and did the grocery shopping and cooking and all this to allow him to have his career. And then it was like, okay, let's shake hands and go our separate ways. We're done now. I'm like, no, I don't think that's what we're going to do. But anyway, so there was, you know, obviously, like I said, the emotional, the mental side of it, there was a lot of it that I thought I had cleared. And then all of a sudden I had this physical reaction and I went to see my healer lady and I'm like, what in the hell is going on here? I don't understand. And that's what she said. She goes, Dawn, it's in your cells. It's cellular memory of this trauma and we're going to clear it out right now.
And that was 30 years.
It was 30 years worth. Yeah. And it just came up and like bit me. Right. And so, and then just like within the last couple of weeks, I had a similar situation come up and I, about something completely unrelated. And I said, Pam, it's happened again. And she goes, it's the same thing. And so it's this big, and I, you know, I don't know how much you follow energetics or whatever, but we're going through a huge transition. Energetically, if you follow astrology, which is, you know, some people poo-poo it. We're pure energy. You know, you've read my book, you know, I talk about that. Like, and you, from what you're studying too, the quantum physics and stuff, like this stuff is real. And, you know, we can deny it all we want to, but the reality is we are pure energy. And even my husband, my current husband, is an electrical engineer. I mean, he works with crystals, right? In his engineering business. I mean, he's far from a woo-woo guy. But, you know, he says that too. It, like I say in my book, it's like you've seen people who walk in a room and they light it up, and you see the Debbie Downers that come in and bring it down. What is that? That's energy, right? And he loves, you know, he grew up from in Newport Beach, you know, Beach Boys guy, Good Vibrations, that song. That's what that's all about, right? It's amazing. It's really amazing to go really deep into this stuff. But yeah, there was, and this particular, it can, and that was related to, obviously, that was a big, huge betrayal younger in my young adult life. But then there, I was actually involved with two different network marketing companies in my career. And the first one, I had the ability to purchase a large book of business. You can buy and sell just like an insurance business or something like that. And so I had made a huge investment in this book of business, and I lost it overnight, because my partner left the company and they basically shut it off. And this was during the great financial crash. My house, that was one reason my Orange County house went into foreclosure, as I had pulled the equity out to buy this business. And they basically said, you know, it had just gotten taken over by a vulture capital firm. And they basically said, you know, too bad, so sad, go sue your partner. Even though I presented stock certificates and purchase agreements and all of the things to prove that this was my business.
And that guy that quit got your money?
No, he didn't get it either. The company just kept it. The company just terminated us, took our business back. And then he went to a new company, which is the second one that I went to. And I had the opportunity to be involved. That company did $100 million its first full year in business. And we made over $1 million in a 6-year period on a part-time basis. But then once again, then that he was the master distributor, he sued the company and we were terminated, basically guilt by association. By that time we had moved to Mexico. Thankfully we had divine timing. We had invested for 2 years, all the money that we made in our property, which we ultimately turned into a boutique hotel. And so there was obviously some betrayal trauma with this, because once again, I didn't do anything wrong. Like it was, I was friends. I mean, we were like family with this couple that was very successful in the industry, and the founder knew that. And so it was basically just like, nope, if he's gone, she's gone too. And I'm a lawyer, but even though I had nothing to do with the lawsuit, right? I wasn't a litigator. I was a business transactional attorney. So I had these two traumatic events occur. And just, you know, a week before last, I had an opportunity, an incredible opportunity come my way to affiliate, not a network marketing company, but more of a licensing type of an arrangement. And it's exciting. And yet there's a part of me that is like, you know, how do you trust again when that's happened? And I swore after that, I'm like, that's it. I am done building someone else's empire. I'm going to build my own. And so what I'm having to work through is, this isn't just about building that company. This is about being in the driver's seat, not a passenger. This is about defining the relationship in a way that's comfortable for me. This is building my business alongside of helping this other entity achieve its goals. But still, like, that trauma is there. And so I just saw Pam on Monday and I'm like, Pam, I don't know what's going on. But and once again, like, you know, she's like, and actually it was ChatGPT, believe it or not, that helped me identify this betrayal trauma.
Wow.
And it's It's not that GPT. I love it. And it knows me. I've been using it to help ideate on my videos, my YouTube channel videos. I've been using it for helping with the scripting. I've been using it for a lot, so many different things, social media content. And because I've been using it for so long, it like knows my voice.
Yeah.
And, you know, and one of my business coaches had said, always tell ChatGPT, make sure this doesn't sound like AI. Right. Make it. And so it started spitting stuff back to me. And it's like, okay, this is in your brand voice. And it doesn't sound like and it's kind of funny.
It is.
And and it's given me some really, it's been, this lady I'm talking with, as she said, it's been a great coaching partner in some ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To go through.
I was upset one day. I don't even know what had happened, but I went on during the Zoom. I went on ChatGPT and I was like, da 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 da. And this happened. And ChatGPT was like, well, yes, you're very sensitive. It's understandable that you would feel that way. I was like, oh, thanks. You know, like it was just perfect. And it's like, this is what you could do. Would you like this? You know, and it knew me. It knew why I was upset. And I was like,
Yeah.
Talk about getting validated. It was like,
right. Yeah. I know.
Anyway. Yeah. All right. So there you were. You went to law school.
Mm-hmm.
We're going all the way back. You went to law school. Now, how'd you do that if you were now a single?
Well, that's another. So I was still a mortgage banker at the time. I was making good money and I was going to do their 4-year plan, go part time, continue working. And then a company that I was working for decided to fire me. Long story, I got fired right before we went to trial for my divorce. And I ended up, thankfully, he lied about his income. And I got about half of what my divorce attorney told me I would get, which was critical because the property settlement involved me keeping the house, which was underwater because the market had shifted. And so I said, as long as I can get enough spousal support to pay for my mortgage payment, I'm willing to keep the house because I like the house. We just bought it a year earlier, you know, and he didn't want to buy the house. That should have been a red flag, right? So anyway, we ended up going to trial. And then, like I said, thank goodness I got fired because I could have ended up paying him alimony because he lied about his income. So then I went back a year later and they ended up increasing it, but I ended up I rented out 2 rooms in my house in order to get enough income to be able to cover that mortgage payment. And I got student loans really to pay my expenses. I didn't really have a lot of other, the good news is I got rid of his $100,000 worth of student loan debt, is what he had.
Oh, I'm couldn't do.
It wasn't mine, you know, like, yeah, here you go. So I didn't really have much doubt otherwise. So I did the 2.5-year suicide plan. I'm like, that's it. If I'm going to go through this, it's going to be hard. I'm going to go through it as fast as I possibly can. So I just put my nose to the grindstone and I banged it out, passed the bar the first time. I ended up doing a summer program at Cambridge, England. And that was the highlight of my career. I studied international human rights from Peter Duffy, former Amnesty International chair. It was an amazing experience. So that was
during law school.
That was during law school.
Wow.
And then I ended up, because I was involved in business before, which the school that I went to was a lot of really kind of focused. It was not ABA accredited at that time. It has become since. But the population average age was about 33. So it was very well known for people who wanted to go back to school. So I had my classmates were, you know, more experienced. One lady I ended up going to work for a while as a clerk owned her own escrow company. And she decided she wanted to become a real estate attorney. And so there were a lot of people like that. But I had an interest in international business. And so I didn't do anything my first year. Like, I didn't even know. I kind of skated through the University of Minnesota. My degree was in anthropology. Like, I just took easy courses. Nobody had gone to college in my entire family. Like, no one. And it was actually my ex's mother who said, I really think you should go to college, because she had dropped out in her sophomore year to get married and stuff. And it was a regret that she had. She was actually very successful in real estate. She's like, you can always do real estate later. Why don't you get your college degree? And so I'm like, okay, well, I will, but I'm going to take classes that I like. So anyway, she had helped get me a job at a mortgage company here in the Twin Cities after I finished school. But because I knew the importance of networking, I decided to go, you know, I wanted to pursue more in that international business relation. I like the transactional nature of real estate. I just didn't like the roller coaster. So there was a bulletin board with all the student associations in the hallway. And one of them was the International Law Society. And I kept watching it. My first year, like I said, I'm like, I got to do this, see if I'm actually smart. Because I didn't know. My ex was really smart, right? But yeah. I didn't know if I was smart. I'm like, am I really smart? And I ended up, out of 300 people in the class, I came in ranked number 5 and I made the dean's list. And I was like, dang, I'm
for
smart.
Undergrad? This is undergrad?
Well, this is in law school. And no, I was a B student as an undergrad. Oh, like okay. I could have gotten A's.
But law school number 5? Whoa.
In my first semester. Yeah. I did finish it near the top of the class, top 10%.
Wow.
But I was shocked. Like I, you know, they say, look to your right, look to your left. Like, you know, you're not going to be here. And so I was scared. I was scared I wasn't going to make it. And so I just studied my butt off and I was like, wow. So then by the second year, I'm like, okay, I want to kind of spread my wings a little bit, kind of learn some things. And so I went into the student services. I'm like, hey, there's this bulletin board about international law society, but I don't see anything on there. And they said, well, that's because all the students that were involved have graduated. Why didn't you restart it? We'll help you. And I went, okay, I don't know what to do. So I just started arranging for speakers to come in every month, and customs, immigration, you know, I had a professor that taught international business transactions. And so I just started lining up all these speakers. So by the time I graduated, I had a network of attorneys who were practicing in the fields that I was interested in. So I just sent them nice letters and said, hey, can I get a 30-minute informational interview with you to learn more about what you do and, you know, kind of what you like, what you don't. And one of my professors, my former professors, actually offered me a job. And I always laugh about it because I said things in that job interview you would never say in a job interview, you know, like, you know, I'm 35 years old. I'm not doing depo summaries in the bottom of some musty law firm for 80 hours a week and blah, 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 and kind of casting the vision for what I wanted my life to look like. And he'd had a parade of people coming in wanting to carry his briefcase and, you know, oh, can you give me a job and stuff? And I wasn't like that at all. And so it was an amazing opportunity. Hillary, I did things you only dream about in your first year out of law school. I was involved with very high level negotiations for engineering procurement construction contracts for industrial facilities, namely copper, gold, and silver mines, to the tune of $20 million to $2 billion projects.
Wow.
Only chick in the room, boardroom, right? I just was a little sponge. And, you know, my boyfriend at the time, he's like, you know, Frank was like burned out on traveling. He traveled around the world making deals for Floor Daniel for many years and then, you know, had represented developers. And my boyfriend says, Dawn, you're like the dog at the door with the leash in its mouth. Like, where are we going? Where are we going? And Frank's was like, oh God, we got to travel again. But I learned so much. He was a sole practitioner, so he was just a huge mentor to me. And unfortunately, the bottom fell out of that market, and he ended up having a series of small strokes. And so his doctor said, you're finished. So I went to the firm, you know, you seen the movie, read the book. Yeah, I think I got fired from there because I didn't wear pantyhose. But that's another story. There was a female partner who wore long, mid-calf length calico dresses. And I have really nice legs. I got them from my mother. And so I would wear short skirts. And, you know, I don't think I was a fit, but it was okay. It was interesting. And about that time, yeah, I actually got fired 2 weeks after I had a hysterectomy. I was out and this was kind of like pre.
Now this now. Was, wait, so you're still California, haven't met your husband yet.
Right.
Okay. In between marriage. Okay. During those 10 years. Okay. All right.
Yep. So, and so I kissed lots of frogs. Because... In 2000, I had fibroids. And so I had just met Tom in May of that year. Well, I kind of knew him. We kind of hung out in the same circle, but I didn't know him well. And then he said he lived on a sailboat and goes sailing every weekend. And I love the water growing up in Minnesota. And so that he took me sailing our first date, but he's 10 years older than I am. And so once again, I didn't know it was a date. So I said things during that date that you would never say on a date.
And he liked it.
And he liked it. Yeah. And so then a few months later, yeah, I ended up needing this major surgery, and he basically took care of me and never left. He was working. He worked at half a mile from my house. And so then, yeah, I was out for 2 weeks, and then I was bored out of bored to death. You know, daytime TV was all there was. There was no internet back then to speak of. And so I begged my doctor to let me go back to work just because I was bored out of my mind. And yeah, the first week he's like, okay, go back, but listen to your body, right? Don't push yourself. Well, by the end of Thursday, I had already put in 40 hours. They wanted me to stay late. I was feeling feverish. And I said, I'm sorry. I really think I've pushed it too far this week. I need to go home and rest. And the next day, Friday afternoon at lunchtime, he pulled me into the calico dress lady's office and pushed the paycheck across the table and said, you're done here. And I said, well, okay. I didn't really like it here anyway, right?
That was the firm. That was still the firm.
That was the firm. And that was the last job I ever had in 2000. It's in August of 2000. So yeah, coming up 25 years, no job. Woo. Jobs are way overrated.
Wow. But you had already met Tom. He took care of you. So at least you have that. Okay, good. All right.
And now, I always say God is paying me back for my first one. I kissed frogs for 10 years and finally found my prince. And
how did you meet him again?
Well, I was working in Newport Beach off MacArthur Boulevard with Frank, and across the street was a little bar called the Classic Q. It was little pool tables and food and everything. And my girlfriend from law school worked in the area. So I don't know if you've ever been in Orange County traffic, but 5 o'clock traffic from the 405 freeway up to the city of Orange is a parking lot. So we would just meet there occasionally, you know, once a week or so, and have a beer and dinner and stuff and wait out the traffic and go home. And so, and Tom kind of did the same thing. He was visiting his mom down in Newport Beach. His dad had passed away. And so you get to, you know, kind of like the Cheers bar thing. So it was just, he was just somebody that I knew, but not well. And then Scott, one of the guys, had a pool party on a Memorial weekend and passed out flyers and invited everybody over to his house. And so that was really the first time that I sat down and had a lengthy conversation with Tom. And then the sailing invitation came out, and kind of the rest is history, as we say.
Oh.
He was a friend first, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
He was a friend first. Just kind of grew
up. Wow. All right. So you said you were still with Frank at that time. You hadn't gone to the firm yet.
When we first met, when Tom and I first met. Yeah. Cause I knew him for a while. And then that had wound down and then it was after.
So then you went to the firm, then you had the hysterectomy, then they fired you. Okay. So why don't we stop here and go to the commercial break, since it seems like a good breaking point, and then we'll come back and we'll hear the rest of the story. Cool.
All right.
Parents and teachers, imagine a classroom where every child belongs, where kids are seen, known, and part of a real community. That's the world Kikori creates. Kikori isn't just another program. It's hands-on, playful, and filled with activities kids love, all while building skills that matter for life: confidence, kindness, resilience, and teamwork. Kids learn how to regulate themselves, connect with others, and discover the joy of learning that lasts a lifetime. And it works. Schools using Kikori have seen behavioral referrals drop by 25%, and teachers save hours of planning time. Whether you're a teacher building a safe, positive classroom or a parent wanting your child to grow socially and emotionally, Kikori makes it easy to bring these life skills into everyday learning. So if you're ready to help kids grow stronger, kinder, and more confident while creating a community where every child belongs, visit KikoriApp.com. That's KIKORI, where kids thrive together.
Hey, it's Hillary from the Getting Real with Hillary show. Life can be messy, raw, and real. And sometimes we're afraid to feel vulnerable. We're afraid to be that real self. Well, that's exactly what the Getting Real with Hillary show and Getting Real movement is all about, being our true selves. Every week, I bring you stories of transformation, authenticity, and hope. People getting real with their struggles, their faith, and their breakthroughs. So don't miss a thing. Subscribe to my weekly newsletter today. You'll get stories, links to everything new, and how to create a life you love every week directly to your inbox. You can also find my books on Amazon, my courageous and riveting memoir, The Second Piece of French Toast, in case you feel stuck in your life and want to get inspired. How I came out about my no sex life and my marriage, in my second book, Real Talk. That one will get you speaking up in ways you've been too afraid to do so, and really creating amazing freedom. And my third book, How to Stop Fixing Yourself and Start Having Fun, the name is called Your Bullshit is Your Blessing. Find links to everything and subscribe to my YouTube channel, Getting Real with Hillary, and you'll find the links in the header. So visit, and you can also visit gettingrealwithhillary.com, because the real you is worth it and wants to come out. And thank you, as always, to our sponsor, KikoriApp.com. We have a bunch of sponsors who are our logo sponsors, and you'll see their banners going across underneath. And thank you all to them. You make our show possible. And since I don't know exactly who's going to be on then, I'm not even going to mention them by hand, but you can see them. And if you have any questions, you can definitely contact me or contact them. And now we're going to hear the rest of the story with Dawn. Hello. All right. So you met him, you just had that, you got fired. Now, were you already in the network marketing at that point?
No, actually, I had brought clients over. Frank and I had developed some more local clients. I brought those over to the firm. They didn't like it there any more than I did. So I was looking for a job where I could be sort of general counsel. I had the sales and marketing background. So I was looking for like a small company where I could wear multiple hats. Didn't find it. Meanwhile, my clients were calling me, wanting me to perform legal services for them, saying we didn't like it at the firm either because I had to bill them for every second, right? Because I had a quota, and Frank didn't believe in that. So it was a eye-opening experience there. So I just sort of started in sole practice. The name of my firm was Outhouse Counsel. Because big companies have in-house counsel, right? Small companies need outhouse counsel. And so my tagline was general counsel to small business, because law offices of Dawn B. Fleming just didn't seem like what I did. Well, and then my husband, Tom, actually came up with the alternate tagline, which was before shit happens. right. Because that was my goal, was to keep them out of trouble. I was not a litigator. Right. So I was doing that for a while. And then my girlfriend actually had got burned out of practicing family law, decided to start an attorney referral service. And while she was putting that together, she discovered prepaid legal. And so she contacted me to be on her panel as a business attorney. I said, no, I didn't want to do that. But she said, well, I have this other thing that you might be interested in. So I had started in 2002 offering it because people think you're an attorney. They think you know everything. So divorces, DUIs, bankruptcies, landlord, tenant, like they're calling you for all these things. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I can't help you. Would you like a corporation? Can I do, you know, that sort of thing. I got a contract I can draft. So I just started referring them, making an extra $500,000 a month on throwaway business.
Wait, it wasn't much. $500,000?
No, 500 to 1,000.
Like, wow.
No. But I mean, for business, you're just going to turn away. And so I did that for about, I'm trying to remember how long it was. Maybe a year. I think it was about a year. And Kristen called me and she says, "Hey, they're having a convention in Las Vegas. Will you go with me?" And I said, "No, Kristen, I hate Vegas. It's dirty. It's smoky. It's there's pornography laying all over the sidewalk. It's noisy. You can't tell what time of day it is. I hate Vegas." She's like, "No, come on. It'll be fun. I need a roommate." And I'm like, "Ugh." She was in England with me actually in law school. We rented a house out and cruised down the Thames. She was a kick in the pants, but anyway, she finally talked me into it. So I go, because I'm curious. I'm like, who are these people? How does this company work? I knew it worked. Like, people were happy, but I didn't understand how they were structured. So I went out of curiosity, and the keynote speaker that year was Robert Kiyosaki. And that changed my life, because I sat there in that stadium in Vegas, pissed, when he did the cash flow quadrant, and I realized I was an S, and I had previously been an E, of course, and nobody told me about the B or the I options. Mm-hmm. I was like, "Oh man, I have just invested all this time, all this money, all this energy into this career that I don't want." And so I had created a downline of probably about 80 people at that point. That's why I think it was about a year after I had affiliated with, because what happened was I just started talking to other attorneys, knowing they were getting these calls too. Yes. So I said, "Hey, if you can't help them, send them to me." Because otherwise, I mean, back in the day, it was good luck in the yellow pages, right?
Yeah.
Because there was no internet back then. And so they said, "Well, what are you going to do with them?" And I go, "Well, I'm going to refer them here." And they said, "Well, I want to do that too, because, you know, they could." So I had this organization I had built. And back way back here in Minneapolis, back in, I was like 20, 21 years old, I had done Mary Kay. Okay. I had a pink room in my little house in Minneapolis. Thank God they had a inventory buyback period clause. So I said, told Kristen when I had signed up to offer the service, I said, "Listen, I know it's a network marketing company. Don't ask me to go to any meetings. I don't want to do any of that stuff." And so I got back to California after this convention here in Robert Kiyosaki, say, "Oh, by the way, network marketing is a B quadrant business." So I already had one. And I said, "Okay, what if I really tried? What if I really worked the system?" And so I shaved my head. I started drinking the Kool-Aid. I started shaking the tambourine. And that was in April. And by the end of December, I closed my practice. I replaced my income my first full year in business. And I never looked back, because I knew practicing law was going to mean dying at my desk, right? Never creating the lifestyle of my dreams. And so that's how I transitioned out. And then I was doing the employee benefit side of the business. And so I would go into companies and offer it along with the Aflac agents and whatever. I had a number of insurance agents that were a part of my team. And so I would go in and we'd do a commission split. I would do all the presentations and stuff. They already had the appointments, the relationships with the HR directors and all of that. So it was a pretty good gig until 2008. And we all know what happened with the great financial crash. And so all my companies ended up closing their doors, massive layoffs. The way the commission was structured, you got a one-year advance commission, but they only had to pay month to month, right? And if they canceled, they would charge back your commission. Well, I ended up in charge back hell. I worked for free for 6 months to get back to zero. And let's just say the joy left. And that at the same time, my husband, Tom, he had a high-end engineering practice that involved surveillance systems for governments, Boeing, the big companies. He was a subcontractor. And so he had done really high-level things. Even I'd been to Spain with him. He worked for the Spanish government, the Colombian government. Well, when the economy melted down, guess what? All the governments went broke too. And so overnight, his business dried up. So in 2008, we found ourselves with three houses in foreclosure. I had bought a couple of rental properties in the Panhandle because that's where we had decided to go. And we had, I missed a piece back at, we got married in 2003. So after I had quit practicing, I was working with Prepaid, and I was number three for him. He was number two for me. So we got married on our honeymoon. We went down to the British Virgin Islands, chartered a 35-foot sailboat, just the two of us. Hadn't been in
a car. Oh, number two and three, marriage. I was like, what are you having? Why are you marrying their third choice? Okay, good.
Third time, yep. Third time's a charm. And
you,
so
wait, you were his third and he was your second. Is that what you said?
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Took a while. Exactly. Okay, go ahead. No, you went to British Virgin Island.
So we got married down there. I had a glorious time, you know, hung out in paradise. And that was when we came back. I was still practicing at that time. I had a client that owned a limousine service. And so we would trade. He picked us up at LAX and we got on the 405 freeway and there's six lanes of traffic in each direction, none of it moving. And we looked at each other and said, this is our life. What are we doing here? I had nothing keeping me, as I mentioned. His two boys were grown and gone. And so I just asked the question, if you could live anywhere, where would you like to live? And he said, I kind of like Destin, Florida, in the Panhandle. And so that's why we had we'd purchased a couple of rental properties back then, thinking it was a good idea in 2005. Who knew? And then, of course, things had crashed. So we did ultimately decide we wanted to go to Florida. We're going to leave. We refinanced the house in 2006, bought that business. A year later, we were going to move. And then that's when the values crashed. And so we're kind of stuck there for a few years. And it was 2010. We were in pretty bad shape financially. And I was trying to fix it for 2 years. One time Bank of America transferred me 10 times. Because no $10 employee wanted to talk to me when they found out I was an attorney. I gained weight. I was miserable. And so we finally said, we're going to go. We can't live our life according to real estate that we can't control. So we jumped on our sailboat. We bought our big boat in 2006 and we sailed 5,000 miles through the Panama Canal and the old, you know, jump, the net will appear. And so we left San Diego with 165 sailboats. It's called the Bahahaha. It's a group sail that goes from San Diego to Cabo. And we just kept going. We'd moved our things to...
Did they all go through the Panama Canal?
No. Mm-mm. Some of them keep going, but we were kind of... We weren't retired at that stage. We were just kind of more making a delivery of our own boat. So... we did it relatively quickly, about 6 months we took going around. I mean, sometimes people take years for that trip. But
when you, I know we're running out of time, but I just want to ask, because I had just visited the Panama Canal a few years ago. You were this little tiny boat actually sailing through, or do they put you on a big boat? No? Oh, my God. You had to go in the locks just like everyone else? Wow. How
fun. Yeah, it was pretty amazing. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So we have to get to.
Okay.
We have like 12 minutes. So okay. I want to make sure we tell them about your book and how you live there and all this kind of stuff. I mean, sure. This is fascinating. I'm asking you the question. It's great. I mean, it's fascinating. All right. So tell us how you got to all of that. So you sailed over there. You sailed all the way through and you got there.
Yeah.
And then I think you decided you didn't want to be there. Right.
Well, no, we stayed there for 2 years. Tom got a job for the first time in 25 years. He started working at a shipyard in Panama City. There was a gentleman on the boat next to us in the marina that worked there. So he was offered a job and did amazing.
Now, was that Florida?
Yes.
Panama City, Florida. Okay. Panama City, I'm thinking Florida. You stayed in Panama. Okay. All right. So go ahead. Sorry.
And then I basically was practicing law representing myself because when I figured they were just going to take all the houses, right? They were just all going to go in foreclosure and they were going to take them. And I was amazed to find out I still owned them. And one of them, they did a loan mod. I later found out the reason they gave me such a smoking deal, 5% fixed, dropped $40,000 from the principal, no interest, no payments, was because a foreclosure attorney was disbarred for running an illegal foreclosure mill. So that one was taken care of. We ended up doing a short sale on the house in Orange. And then, the other one I was able to resolve as well. But meanwhile, I'm 60 Minutes came out, all the mortgage fraud. Like, I worked in the industry. I had no idea what had happened or why the crash had happened. So it was every day Tom would come home from work at Chipper. And I would go, "You're not going to believe what I found out today." And it was like that for like months, really. Because I kept digging. So anyway, meanwhile, that's when our friends left Prepaid Legal and started this new company. And I ended up jumping on board because I knew the track record of the founder and I knew the product worked. It was the same month I turned 50. I used the product. My crow's feet disappeared in a week. And I said, "I'm in. I don't know anything about anti-aging products." You know, I thought they'd lost
their mind. What was that? What company?
Nerium.
Oh, Nerium. Okay.
Nerium, yeah. So had a good run there. Didn't like the panhandle. They used the words wind chill and the winter weather forecast. Culture was quite odd. So we moved down to Punta Gorda, lived there for 4 years. It was a great run. Joined the yacht club, played competitive tennis for the first time in our lives. It was a blast. But the Florida culture just wasn't a really good fit for us either. But by then we had recovered financially. So we're ready to buy something. Looked at property all the way from Sarasota, Bradenton down to Naples. Everything was $1 million. If you wanted to have your on the water, you know, with the boat out front, that was our dream. And taxes, $8,000 a year, hurricane insurance. I mean, you're talking a grand a month and you haven't even talked about a mortgage payment. And I'm skittery because I'm still seeing these prices go up and up and up by then. It's like 2013 or something like this. And I'm seeing these price rise. And I said, you know, I'm not feeling it. I'd been going to Isla Mujeres since 1992. I'd watched the development on the island. We'd looked at condo complexes go up. And I said, you know, if we're going to buy something, I want to buy something that puts money in our pocket. Again, Robert Kiyosaki, right? And so we went down there and I met with a friend who I met in 92. He was a bartender on the beach and now owns the number one restaurant on the island. Very, very smart businessman. And talked to him and he's like, "Don't buy a condo, too many rules, homeowners association dues, too much. Buy a house." At that time, there were a shortage of 3 to 4 bedroom houses. So found this foogly little house, 4 years old on a double Caribbean oceanfront lot. And the seller was willing to carry financing because there's mortgages really aren't a thing in Mexico. About 90% of the transactions are cash, which is a good thing. The market's very stable as a result, right? The housing bubble happened because of the free, you know, basically fog a mirror, get a mortgage, and that drove up the prices. So you don't have that down there. So we just did it as an income diversification strategy. We had no intention of moving down there. And every penny we made, because we were making good money with Nerium, we reinvested into improving the property, put in a pool, doubled the size, construction, all that. But a year later, we realized, you know, it's actually cooler down there in the summertime. If you've ever spent the summer in Florida, it's not nice. It's not nice at all. And so we're like, you know, we can move anywhere. We have a 2-bedroom, 2-bath condo that floats that we can take anywhere. We can sail down there, try it out. If we don't like it, we'll go somewhere else or come back or whatever, right? We're not trees. We don't have to grow where we're planted. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we did. So we stayed on the boat, lived on the boat, and then stayed at the house when it wasn't rented. And by the time that ending happened with Nerium, that property was able to sustain us financially. Tom was actually collecting Social Security by then too. So we were okay. If we had still been in this big fancy waterfront rental house in Florida with yacht club dues and all that, we would have been in trouble. But thankfully we had made some smart decisions to position ourselves to be able to weather that storm. And so what happened was my husband's never met a stranger. We would go to Playa Norte, which has been ranked the number one beach in all of Mexico. And he would strike up conversations with random strangers. Mm-hmm. "Where are you from? Have you been here before?" In part to market the property, right? Because a lot of times people will do a day trip from Cancun and go, "Oh, it's really nice here. I think I want to stay here." So he was kind of seeing, you know, make sure passing out cards and so forth. But of course, what do? They say, "Well, where are you from?" And he would say, "Well, I live here. We live here and we own this house." And they go, "What? You live here? You own property? You mean foreigners can own property here?" And literally, Hillary, I had about 100 of these conversations, or he started them. And I was like, people really seem to be interested in this. So then COVID hit. And I just started thinking about, you know, I think because I'd wanted to start my own consulting and coaching business anyway. And so I just launched this workshop. I think it was originally entitled How to Live in Paradise Without Worrying About the Paycheck. Mm-hmm. And I did that for a little over a year. And it became, that's what turned into, had the book turned into. So it talks about, I kind of make the case as an attorney about why I believe the American dream has moved overseas. It's not here anymore. Healthcare and housing are big issues, right? And so it's been a really good decision for us to do that. And I love Mexico. I love the fact that there's, I know we weren't going to talk about politics and I don't want to, but I will say it's kind of nice living in a country where you have a female president, a smart one, a scientist. Imagine.
So now you. Yeah. Okay. So you don't live there anymore, right? Did you end up selling that house?
No, it is for sale. Yeah, but we own it. We don't live. Basically, the income from that property has gone up so much that it's not cost effective for us to live there. We rented out our penthouse apartment in April for 3 weeks. It covered 7 months of our rent in Merida in a 3-bedroom, 4-bath house with a private lake in a gated community, 2 years old. So it just doesn't make sense for us to live there anymore. The other thing is the island is 4.3 miles long and it gets between 25 and 30,000 visitors a day. So it's sort of like living in Disneyland.
Yeah.
So I couldn't, I the last
year there,
we still,
so you still have it as a rental.
Yes. Oh. And I've actually, I've done retreats down there. If it doesn't sell, that's, the other thing, I will probably be marketing it as a retreat, venue because it could be either just rented as a standalone property, or I could do the whole catering. I mean, I have all of the contacts on the island to be able to do more of a turnkey retreat for people, because I've been doing some networking here, with a women's business group, and they keep asking, oh, I want to do a retreat down there. And so I'm thinking, you know, maybe that's really a way to set it apart from your average Airbnb or VRBO property. So options.
Wow. All right. So now you're spending summers in Minnesota. And do you still have the sailboat?
We do. And that, and it's, my husband's going to be 73 this year. No, 74. I'm 63. He's 74. Oh, he just yelled at me. 74. Very healthy, but this is a 48-foot sailboat, 30 tons. It's kind of too big for just the two of us at this stage of life. So we're going to probably, we've had it for 2 decades. It's been like part of the family, but I think we're ready to let her go to the next person. We've had so many amazing memories on the boat, but I think it's time. The strings are getting pretty heavy, he says.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Well, we have about 2.5 minutes. What would you like to leave people with? I know you're about connection and energy. Anything, any message, you know, how can they find you? All that good stuff. How would you like to leave them?
Well, I think the message I want to leave, going back to the beginning here, Hillary, the card that came up was loss. And through my story, you can hear we've experienced a lot of loss. I mean, you know, lost marriages, lost properties, lost businesses, lost jobs. I mean, it's constant. And we know that the one constant in life is change, right? Mm-hmm. And I guess the message I know there's always people going through things like that. Like, that's just life, right? You don't get the joy without the sadness. And I guess the big lesson that I've learned through all the losses that I've had is they're not failures, right? They're wisdom. It's really about wisdom. And it's really about being excited and being open to the next opportunity that comes your way. I recently, in July, I launched a new program and it fell flat. It was not successful. And it bummed me out. Not really so much because of the financial situation that it didn't sell. It was really because I'm so passionate about serving people, right? And helping people go through these life transitions. And I was sad that, you know, I wasn't going to be able to help the people that I wanted to help with this. And feeling like, okay, what am I missing? Something's missing. And, you know, just staying open, just being able to sit with it. I may relaunch it. I may not. I may tweak it. But I really sort of wanted to focus more on what's coming next. Like, okay, you know, like that was it. I felt like that was a door that was shut, but there was something else that was bigger and better that was coming. And so it's so easy to just kind of get down. And that certainly I was. I mean, there was a period of time shortly after where I was like, I was really down because I worked really hard, right, to put together all this great content and really serve at a high level, even people who weren't going to buy from me. And I think that was the hard part is that didn't get consumed even. So I didn't even, and there were, you know, you kind of have to plan to review, right? Well, okay, tweak it. Like it was probably the list. The list was 5 years old. It was for people who were interested in moving overseas. That's not what I was selling, right? So you lining things up and then having people help you, but more importantly, like understanding, I went to this conference in Dallas and this huge opportunity has come my way. And I'm not sure if I'll say yes or not, but it can happen that fast. Mm. You know what I mean? Like you can be like down in the dump, like maybe you lose your job, for example, but maybe you didn't really like that job that much anyway, right? But you keep it because it's, you get a paycheck, right?
Yeah.
So kind of tolerate things. And I think sometimes it helps at this stage of life. I go, you know what? If a door closes, that's exciting because that means there's another door that's going to be open. Mm. And not focusing on that loss, but really focusing on what's next, what that next opportunity is for you and being open and being receptive to what that might be. And that's how you manifest. We were talking about that in the beginning.
Right? Yeah. Embracing the unknown, which I don't think most people do because it's uncomfortable, but
it is.
That's where the new opportunities lie. But anyway, thank you so much. We're out of time, unfortunately, but this has been great hearing your story of just, you know, you just kept going. You kept reinventing yourself. So I think that's so inspiring for most people to learn who maybe just stay stuck because they don't know what to do. So
never too late, never too old.
Yeah. And with the doc again, Dawn Fleming, Claim Your Dream Life. It's so great. Really.
And then the YouTube channel, if they're interested, is Midlife in Paradise.
Oh, great. Midlife in Paradise. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Awesome. Well, thank you, Dawn. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for watching this episode. I started Getting Real with Hillary when I discovered that I was a people-pleasing, pleasant phony, and wanted to be more of my real self. We can grow together. If you will like the show, subscribe to my channel, and share this episode with your friends and family so that we can have a world that's more real.